Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, August 22nd. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today, and we welcome back Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. If you have a question about things that grow, whether you want them or not, in your yard or your garden, now's the time. 800-348-2551. I can tell you that the crabgrass is looking beautiful in my lawn right now. You want to talk about that? 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address, and the number is 800-348-2551 now. It's usually a popular show when the gardeners are here, so call early. Fred, Dale Isla, and Greg, your calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today. We welcome back Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. And Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York. If you have a gardening question, now is the time. There are a few open lines. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us, too, voxpop@wamc.org. Now, in general, I try to tell you not to send pictures. Diana in Woodstock sent a picture. She's a very nice person, so we're going to let it slide. But don't send pictures because nobody on the radio is going to hear it. The number here is 800-348-2551. And the email is voxpop@wamc.org. Dale Isla Riggs, welcome back. How's the Berry Patch?
The Berry Patch is great. It's my favorite time of year. It's watermelon season.
Ooh.
We did a huge harvest the other day, and I'm so excited to be able to eat watermelon with all my other berries.
Now, you do total organic farming, yeah?
So we do pesticide-free farming.
Okay.
Organic doesn't necessarily mean no pesticides.
I see. So no pesticides. You
correct.
Do it with your smarts, your cunning.
And our beneficial insects and controlling the environment and our exclusion netting so that we are able to keep out the worst of the pests.
Right. The reason I ask was, sometimes you see a watermelon in the store and it's a medium size, maybe, 6, 8, 10 inches. And then sometimes you see watermelons that are as big as a Buick. Are those normal, or is there some strange Dr. Frankenstein thing going on?
So those big as a Buick watermelons tend to come from the South.
Ah.
They have a longer growing season, hotter growing season, although this year, who knows, we probably could have grown watermelons that size as well. But it's just a different variety. We actually do just the opposite. We grow personal size watermelons.
I love it.
So that one or two people can eat one watermelon. So we have them from about 4 to 6 inches in diameter to up maybe 8 to 10 or 12 inches.
Cool. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, what's happening over at Ward's Nursery there, Greg Ward?
Oh, I'm back. And
You're back.
It's been like a year, right? I haven't been here in a year.
Well, we had a fun drive. I missed a show, I think.
Okay.
And then
that's what it was.
I went on vacation.
Drive.
You went on vacation.
Yes,
you know,
it did.
These
yep.
things happen. You're still welcome.
Maine's a nice day. Well, I brought you a bouquet there because
that's very nice.
Mostly because I like you, Ray, but also because I wanted to just remind myself, and this is one of the easiest ways to do it, is to look at it all again, of all of the perennials that are still showing or really coming into color in the garden. So there's about 8 kinds of coneflower, various, they're just going crazy. That's all those little daisy.
Is this weed up here? Is this pot? What is this?
Cool, right? that is a type of mint.
Oh,
type of in the bee balm family, punctata, Monarda punctata.
Punctata.
Punctata. Yeah.
All right.
And
same
it's a native
you.
Plant. Pollinators love that stuff. It gets a little crazy, so if you need a nice big spot for that, but
this
all
is
those
cool, man.
Daisy
nice.
Form things are coneflowers, and then there's one Heliopsis, which is the sort of painted yellow one.
Okay, so
in
this
the middle.
One, yeah, oh, up top or oh. Okay, yeah, and it's got a little red in the middle. Yeah, it's
and
beautiful.
And then a Helianthus, which
I'm
is
digging
really
this
similar.
One. What's this, man?
Yeah, that is a coneflower.
I like the coneflower.
Coneflower is, you know, the They're a prairie native that's usually pink, you know, sort of a mauve-y pink. And then there's been a lot of, and there's a couple different species. And so there's been some crosses, some selections. And it just, they've exploded in colors from white through the yellows into these sort of bizarre double pinks.
Yeah.
Lots of sort of red, hot orange colors as well. So
cool.
Amazing.
So you don't mind if I give these to my gardener?
I do not. I think that's a good idea.
I think I'll be out of the doghouse for about 12 hours if I do
that.
So there you go. Fred Breglia, what's going on at the Landis Arboretum?
Oh, you know, we just finished up a 5K not long ago. And
how'd
now
you do?
We're you know, the event was super successful. We had about almost 160 people.
Cool.
And when people heard that a hurricane was in line with the event, we had more people sign up. So apparently, we had a hurricane that went through like 2 days before the event, so they knew the trails were going to be really, really muddy, and I think it
induced. And they signed up anyway?
More people. Actually, we had about 5 people a day on average signing up.
Weird.
We had about 12 people a day once they said the hurricane was definitely on track for hitting us. So, yeah.
So what does that tell you about humanity?
Well, I think it's exciting because some competitive people out there probably say, hey, it's going to be harder for other people. It might give us an edge.
Oh, so if you're a mutter.
So if you're a mutter.
My father was a mutter.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, I think that, you know, there's a lot of people that like to have fun. And, hey, it is fun. I always like to play in the mud. I still like to play in the dirt. So, hey.
To you know, be clear, you did not run in this one, though, right?
I helped to run it, but running it.
I thought there was a rumor you did it in under 20 minutes.
That's not happening. No, my best. The winner of the race though did it in like 18.
With
really, really wet conditions. So, you know, kudos to that.
Is there a steeplechase as well?
No, but my son Mike did run it, and he did really well. He represented Landis Arboretum on my behalf.
Fantastic. So. What was his time?
I believe it was like a little over a half an hour.
Fantastic. He's a youngster.
He's 9 years old.
That's
so
amazing.
Shout out
really
to Mike.
Good for him.
Other than that, we're gearing up for our fall plant sale. It's hard to believe.
When
one
is that?
One event down. It's this year. It's September 7th and 8th.
Wow, it's coming.
So it's coming 10 to 4. Visit our website, landisarboretum.org, all the info on there. But we're growing lots of plants. We have a lot of native stuff. We're getting a lot of stuff in. And it's amazing how fast you go from, hey, it's 5K, all I can think about is 5K, to 5K's over, and all we can think about is a fall sale. And it's 2 weeks away.
I
can't even believe that fall, you know, we're talking a fall sale. But, hey, time flies when you're having fun.
Right you are, sir. All right, let's start with an email here. And, again, Diane in Woodstock sent a beautiful picture, but don't do that if you're emailing us, because nobody can see it out there in radio land. But it's a lovely picture. Here's the email. This is a photo from a month ago where some animal was coming into my garden and cutting down the rose campion plant in several areas of my garden. It continued to do this throughout the blooming season. I thought it might be a groundhog or chipmunks. Deer don't like this plant. Never have eaten it. Whatever it is not eating the plant, just chewing it at the base. The only plant it is happening to is the rose campion. I tried spraying the plant with liquid fence, but that didn't work at all. Any ideas, Diana? And here's the picture. Isn't that nice?
Yeah,
it is beautiful.
It's beautiful. And we printed it on the color printer.
Yes.
That cost me. They docked my salary for that. So here we go. What do you got?
I think we all talked about this briefly, and I think we're all on the same page. We believe it's a vole with a V.
Okay.
It's a Jeopardy question. What is a mouse-like creature with no neck?
That feeds on plants.
Does he work here? Because I have a few suggestions.
A vole.
There you are.
Yep. So.
Okay.
And the picture did help a little bit.
Okay.
We could see where it was eaten, and it helped a little bit. Not that we're encouraging photos to be sent in.
Again, Diana in Woodstock is a saint, so I let it slide. This is from Ann in Adams. I am falling hard in love with dahlias, and I have a couple pots so far. When the season is done, can I just leave them in the pots, or do I have to take them out of the dirt to store them? Also, can I store them in the house? I don't have a garage, but I do have a crawl space under the house, but I think it might get too cold there. And that's from Ann in Adams, Massachusetts.
Well, we have dahlias in pots, and we store them in the pots in our unheated basement for the winter.
Yeah.
So
As long as the pot doesn't stay too wet,
right?
As long as the soil can kind of dry out and sort of become the packing material.
Yeah.
And then it's temperature, right?
Yeah. You know, the unheated crawl space, I wouldn't really worry about it getting too cold if it's a crawl space. You know, the dahlias, as long as that soil around it is not going to freeze, it should be fine.
Yeah, and you could also take them out people do that as well. It also works. You take them out of the soil, and then you kind of store them in brown paper bags, let them dry, and put them in, like, we used to put them in milk crates. And
what does a dahlia look like?
Well, the tuber is looks like a potato.
Okay.
The flower can be size of dinner plates. I mean, they can be the dinner plate dahlias, but you know they can be a lot smaller too. But dahlias
what
are known
are
for
they're
all kinds of colors.
All
they're
colors.
Super duper showy plants.
I think my next door neighbor, who is a great gardener, has those
probably.
By your patio.
Yeah.
I admire them every day.
A lot of flower power on those plants.
There, you can get them anywhere from single ones that are 2 inches in diameter to, like Fred said, dinner plate size.
So cool. Now, Fred, can you eat the tuber? That's the question.
You know, I don't believe you can.
Good.
I've never heard of dahlia tubers being good for you, but I know animals, of course, critters certainly would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
the reason to do, as Fred said, is take it out of the soil and wash off the soil and clean it. It's just so you don't, especially if you've planted them in the ground, that you don't sort of bring in any additional pests and you kind of limit the potential for some rot. But if either way will work as long as you're storing them and that moisture issue is not there.
Yeah. We got to take a break, but let me just follow up on that for a second. You can bring pests. If you dig a plant out of the ground and you bring it inside, what kind of pests can you bring in your house and how dangerous are they?
Mostly, well, I don't think they're dangerous to you. It's just to the dahlia tuber.
I see.
Yes, I'm sorry.
But if they're already in the ground, what's the difference?
It's really just about if there's any kind of fungal spores that are sort of hanging around in the soil, and then the soil stays wet again, then the tuber could rot, and you'll go to plant it in May, and it's no good. It's
when you pull them out, you can inspect them all, so you kind of this one doesn't look right; it's got some rot, so you kind of cull it out.
Gotcha.
And there's a big difference between planting in mineral material like the soil. And a flower pot like Delilah said, mostly at times when you're planting in containers, it's a sterile media. It's a lot of peat moss and perlite and vermiculite, and that stuff is a lot different than all the pathogens that you could get in soil. So if you're lifting it from the soil, it's probably better to clean them up, put them in brown paper bags. But if you're in a sterile media like a container that usually you find in containers. Let that dry right out, and that can serve as the packing materials.
All right, let's take a quick break here. It's Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Delilah Riggs from the Berry Patch. Gardening, your calls coming up. Oldie there from the Dixie Dregs. I forgot the name of the tune. Zach, what's the name of that tune? Punk Sandwich, of course. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Gardening Today with Greg Ward, Delilah Riggs, and Fred Breglia. We have a ton of emails, but we also have a ton of calls. So let's go to the phones. We'll start out in Washingtonville. Dennis. Hello, Dennis.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi.
Go, man, go.
Okay, so I believe I have blossom end rot on my pepper plants and tomatoes. Can I rectify the soil to save the plant, or do I need to pull it?
So you don't need to pull the plant. What you need to do is start watering those plants on a more regular basis. Blossom end rot isn't caused by an actual soil calcium deficiency. It's caused by a calcium deficiency within the plant that's caused by irregular watering. So if the plant's been getting drenched in thunderstorms and then gets dry and then gets drenched again, that's when you get blossom end rot on both tomatoes and peppers.
Yep.
So it's really a matter of nice uniform watering, maybe 3 to 4 times a week, just a nice thorough watering at that time, and the plant should straighten out.
Yep, tomatoes and peppers are just famous for that. They really like the consistent watering.
So this last stretch we've had cannot be good for too many plants, right? With just downpours and then nothing for a day and then more downpours?
I guess it depends on the plant to a degree.
A little bit.
All right. Dennis, you want to follow up, buddy?
Yeah, dahlia or dahlia?
Dahlia, right?
Dahlia.
Dahlia? That's kind of in between. Let's call the whole thing off.
My mom says dahlia.
All right.
Alrighty.
Dennis, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Let's go to Lorraine in Pittsfield. Lorraine.
Hi, can you hear me?
You betcha.
Oh, good. Thanks for taking my call. I bought a property that had a rose bush there. I'm not a gardener. And they bloom in June. And as soon as they bloom, they die. And I'm wondering if there's anything easy because I'm not going to fuss.
Oh, boy.
The flowers, yeah. The flowers just finish and that's what's dying, or the entire plant defoliates?
The flower. So when the buds come up, they look healthy. And when they start to bloom, I could smell it. Smells really great. If I cut it, all the petals fall out. They all fall off as soon as.
Cut them to put them in a vase or something. Then they fall off.
Yeah, but it's okay. Like I don't mind leaving them there. It's just that they start to die as soon as they bloom. The petals start falling off.
I mean, it's just
if I don't cut them.
I would say that is not something that you can really change culturally.
I think that's probably the variety.
Yeah.
Some roses have this really shrub roses that are not the more hybrid types or cultivars tend to have that. I know a number of them tend to have that really short shelf life, if you want to think of it that way. It's just, it opens, blooms, and they fall apart. First wind.
Within a day, even. So, it's not even. I mean, is that what you mean? That's correct?
Yeah, exactly. They just don't have a lot of longevity. Okay. Some of them, that would be my guess.
Yeah, and if it's, I guess the next question we'd have is, does it repeat bloom again for you, like in around the middle of July? Do you get another few flowers on it?
I don't know what a repeat, bloom is. But
so it blooms in mid-June for the first time. And then you know, all those flowers finish off. Do you get more a month later? Do a few more show up month later?
You know, this year was the first time I noticed there were just a couple of flowers that came back, but not the whole bush. It was just a few.
So it did. Second bloom. That's a good sign. So what you might want to do is renovate the plant a little bit. If this is a new plant, is certainly make sure that the area around it is clean and devoid of other weeds and competitors and nicely mulched, you know, and then adding some kind of nutrients or some kind of complete fertilizer to that plant a couple times a year is really helpful. But in the spring, because it's a repeat bloomer, in the spring, and you could still do some of this now because often repeat bloomers will have a nice show in September and even into October these days, reduce the plant, cut it back in half. Regardless of what it's doing right now, just cut it in half and then new growth will come. Again, of course, that fertilizer will help push that. And then you'll get another heavier bloom. And then in the spring, you can do a little thinning, a little reduction, and then it will produce more flowers and maybe give you a longer show. Not each individual flower, but the whole, the whole length of bloom time will be longer.
All right, Lorraine, thank you so much for the call. That was Greg Ward speaking. We also have Fred Breglia and Dale Adler-Riggs with us. It's Gardening Today. Number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org, and we will get back to the emails in a bit. But Bernie in Warwick has been waiting quite a while. Hello, Bernie. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a friend whose lawn just got infiltrated by a lot of stilt grass. And I'm wondering if I can just cut it and then keep cutting it, if it'll keep it from flourishing, or is that not going to work?
I think that might be a good recommendation, that if you can mow it, I believe stilt grass is not too happy to stay that short.
Oh, really? Bernie, did we lose you?
No, I'm here.
You want
to? So that just I can keep cutting it, because they don't go to seed until the end of August, right?
Exactly. So by cutting it, you won't let it go to seed. It will never form flowers.
So then next year it'll be the same. I'll just cut it, and it'll never flourish by adding more seeds.
Correct.
It might take a while, though, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, if this is a lawn and you're looking for it to be a lawn, you know, doing some cultivation, you know, loosening up the area that the stilt grass is going, applying some perennial seeds, you know, fescues, bluegrass, perennial rye, to compete with it, and mowing, the stilt grass should be outcompeted by those grasses if you're keeping it short and there's good soil and adequate moisture.
Bernie, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's gardening today. Is it me or is the crabgrass going insane this year? I mean, listen, you know my philosophy. I don't give a rat's behind what it is. It's green. It's fine.
If it's green, it's good.
My neighbors probably don't like it that much, but it's if you mow it, it stays green. And what's the difference?
Yeah,
but it seems like there's a lot of it.
You know, crabgrass usually moves into disturbed areas
really
well.
It's disturbed, all right.
Yeah.
So you got that.
So
no doubt.
So any areas where things have not been growing, you know, crabgrass will jump in and do that. So it's kind of the same thing, you know. Cultivating those areas lightly, maybe amending that soil if it isn't ideal, putting down perennial seed will compete with the crabgrass. Right now, the crabgrass, I don't think, is quite in flower, the second phase. If you see it, it's kind of short still, but soon it's flowering soon, and then it will start tossing seeds everywhere.
Oh, tremendous. Good. So I can share the wealth with my next-door neighbor.
Yeah, go ahead.
She won't like me, but that's okay. And she listens to The Gardening Show. Hates all my other shows, but loves this one. 800-348-2551. Last thing for me. Fred, I'll ask you, because I know you like to eat the stuff. The Japanese knotweed. When does it flower? We've been battling these guys, and we've been cutting them down at the base, but they're still, there are stragglers. And I don't want them to spew their seeds.
Yeah, so it's more of a summer bloom on that plant.
Oh, it's too late?
Early summer. Summer. Yeah, you probably already went through. I mean, at this point, you would have had to have gone through the entire flowering process, I would think. I haven't seen anything flowering.
If you're cutting it all the time, it's just like the silkgrass, it's not going to flower.
Problem is, there are those that are so far out in the Pachycandra or up on the hill, you miss them until they are already going, you know?
Yes.
Yep. So probably my guess is those probably already flowered. The ones that you cut may never get to that part.
Okay.
But, yep.
Anybody? No?
Nope. It's pretty hard to miss them when you see it, too. It's pretty. It's a showy flower in sense of it's a lot of it. It's covered.
Now, do you want us to save those for you?
No, thanks.
No?
No, we've got plenty.
Okay. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go back to our phone lines here, and we'll go to Malta. Tom, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a common trumpet creeper, planted it 6 years ago, and it is thriving. I mean, it's just growing. I cut away half of it every year after I don't get any flowers on it. And I was just wondering, is there something I can do? I mean, no flowering.
It takes them a while. That's the first thing I would say. So trumpet creeper is trumpet vine, Campsis is the genus, Campsis radicans, I think.
Yep.
And it does, you know, it does take a while to bloom. They do grow really aggressively. Kind of like we say sometimes with wisteria, getting the stems to be a heavier woody stem. So in other words, getting it to the top of whatever you're trying to grow it on, the trellis, or some people like to make them almost standard tree form, getting them to that size and then cutting them back every year, usually this would be late fall or winter or spring, does help get them to bloom so that they're coming off of older wood. That new growth is coming off of older wood. So I think it's just being a little patient. I hate to say that, but I think that's it.
Probably, yeah. They generally, we've got them at the Arboretum. They grow pretty easily. Ours are older ones. They flower nonstop, but it is on the older canes and the older vines that we're getting a lot of the blooms, and they've been established for a while. So younger ones, I have seen them be a little bit, like Greg said, they're just, you know, they're going to produce some blooms, but not real heavy until they get to that that coarser, thicker wood.
Mm-hmm. All right, Tom, thank you very much. Let's go to Pittsfield, and Susan, you're on.
Hi. I have two questions.
Oh.
I understand that bay leaves grow on a tree, and I'm wondering if that is something I can grow in this region, or can I start it in a pot? And my other question is to the berry person. Black currants. You don't have black currants or know where I can buy black currants.
Let's do that one first, and then we'll try to remember the first one. Go ahead, Delilah.
Yeah, black currants, they're certainly for sale in the commercial trade. I don't know which garden centers in the area have them or not.
So in Berkshire County, the state doesn't want us to offer currants or gooseberries.
Right, because of the problem with white pine.
But I don't know, where are you from?
I'm from Pittsfield, Mass, but yeah. I am aware of that.
But I believe that Hampshire, Hamden counties, you are able to purchase them. So as much as I hate to send you far away, that would be a place to look for them.
And they can be grown in New York State as well.
Okay.
Fair enough.
The issue is that any species of ribes is an alternate host for white pine blister rust, which is the main concern. Yeah. So for folks that don't know that, that's why there's an issue.
And so certain counties have a forestry lobby, essentially. Yeah. I'm not sure it's really even a lobby, but these are laws that were put on the books 100 years ago.
Right. Kind of a moratorium of sorts for planting.
So they haven't changed those.
Okay, and then the bay leaf question. Give us the reiteration of that, Susan.
Well, I just understand that they actually grow on trees, and whereas I'm not looking to grow black currants, I'm just looking to buy fresh ones. Can I grow a bay leaf tree?
You could do it indoors, right?
Growing bay is the easiest thing in the world.
Really?
It's so easy.
Could I do it?
Yeah.
Really?
So it's a woody plant. It's evergreen. It is almost hardy enough to plant in the ground around here. You can probably grow them Nantucket, parts of Long Island, maybe south shores of New Jersey. You could put them in the ground where the ground doesn't really freeze. They should actually winter.
Kind of like
a fig tree, but I think a little more tender even.
So a little bit more tender than the fig.
Because the fig will sprout from the ground if it has to. But anyway, keeping a bay in a pot is really the easiest thing to do. And they just need a nice kind of, doesn't have to be much of anything, but a moderately sunny window. They kind of have this evergreen look, but kind of go dormant in the wintertime. They don't do a lot of growing
even
until
if they're
spring.
Inside?
Yeah, they just sort of sit there and are very happy wherever you put them as long as it's a bright spot. And then they start to grow in the spring and they'll grow through the summer and then they stop and they'll wait again. So,
all right.
So you can get one and keep it forever.
Yeah, they're native to the Mediterranean. Yeah. They grow wild in California and Oregon, so you're just a milder climate. As far as black currant fruit, there are some people in New York State growing black currants, so I think maybe get on some of the farmers markets websites and see who's listed and who's taking them to the farmers markets.
All right, Susan, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. If you have a question for the gardeners today, Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs, and Fred Breglia. Here's an email from Daily Listener. That's the person's name. I live in the southern Adirondacks near the Great Sacandaga Lake. I'd like to grow fruiting trees on the property. The land is by the river between mountains. The soil is sandy dirt with a lot of iron. Besides apples, what do you think I could grow?
Pears.
Yeah, probably peaches.
Peaches.
Peaches do great in New York. You can make sure they're cold hardy varieties. Probably plum.
Definitely.
Probably some.
Yeah. European plums would be fine.
Yeah, the European.
Yep. Pie cherries. I wouldn't do sweet
cherries.
Yeah,
not the sweet cherries. They'd be the tarts.
Yeah, that's probably sweet cherries and apricots are the two real tender things. Yep. Otherwise,
pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just make sure you're planting them the right depth, as always. And treesaregood.org if you're.
Treesaregood.org.
Yep, that's put out by the ISA. And, I could say over the years, countless plants I've seen that have problems because they're planted too deep.
Yeah.
And I've never seen a plant that died from being planted too shallow. So
okay,
a little bit on the higher side, but treesaregood.org gives you some great info on that. So when you're installing them right. Measure twice, dig once.
All right, speaking of trees, now this is a fairly long email. And if you're writing in, detail is good, but 9 paragraphs, not so good. But this one is right in the sweet spot. We have 3 minutes, 2.5 minutes before the next break. It's a tree question. So let's try to bang this one out. Copper beech pruning for shape. I have a young copper beech tree, about 25 feet tall. I'm hoping it'll grow into a beautiful rounded shape over time. It has a leading crown top of the tree. It also has two or three branches that are longer than the others, both at the top and halfway down the trunk. Should these be removed while it is young, or should I wait to see if other branches grow longer to match the length?
Yep, so that's a good question, and that is just, you know, right on home run for what everything that happens in urban in the urban landscape. And what we're going is with this is that trees on in a forest, they grow with competition and shade, so they grow straight up to try to break the canopy and get sunlight. And because of that, arborists aren't really needed in the forest too much. Trees grow great structure on their own.
Yeah.
But in an urban landscape, as soon as you take that plant and put it into a place with full sun, that tree now thinks it's at the top of the forest and it says, I'm spreading out.
Oh.
And if it does that, it creates a lot of structural defects that end up leading to premature life of an urban tree. And what happens most commonly is these, just what this guy's saying, is that the side branches will start to almost get as big or compete with that top. And it isn't so much you want to take them all off, but you want to reduce those competing branches.
Yeah.
So cut them back to laterals so that that top has the dominance. And you're going to keep doing that to sort of suppress side branches and let the top keep growing. And in essence, what you're doing is you're doing a sort of a hybrid between what happens if you don't do anything and what happens in a forest in a perfect setting.
Yeah.
And you're sort of suppressing those side branches like nature would do and letting that top become dominant. And by doing that, you're going to end up with a better structured tree.
Okey-doke.
And in the long term, it'll last longer in the landscape, requiring smaller pruning cuts ultimately, which is good. It's a good thing. Big pruning cuts are bad.
You're an encyclopedia about trees, Greg.
You know, I never get tired of this stuff.
I mean, Fred. Yeah. All right, so listen, there's a second part. There's a second part of this. Okay. And we have to go for a break. So let's do a quick answer.
We'll use brevity in this
one. All right, here we go. Second part of Diane's question. As the tree matures, the trunk expands and produces more branches at the top. But do the bottom branches ascend up the tree as the tree grows?
You know, another good question. I was just talking about this to some folks the other day. So, no, the answer is that wherever that branch is, it's there forever. Some people have seen where branches are near sidewalks, and some codes mandate, well, if it's above a sidewalk, we got to prune it above 7 feet. And I've had some folks say to me over the years, well, this thing's at 5.5 feet. I mean, why don't we just give it a couple of more years? It'll grow up to 7.
Yeah.
And the answer to that is it won't. If anything, it might actually get lower, but that main union is staying right where it is. How would it get lower? Because it'll get bigger and it'll start to pull down. But ultimately, it's not going up. The tree grows up.
I blame cartoons, especially the Warner Brothers cartoons.
They started a lot
They're
of this.
They're the ones who set us up for that.
They definitely started this.
Yeah. I think most of society's ills can be laid at the feet of the Warner Brothers cartoons. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. That's the number on The Gardening Show. Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, and you will be back with talk about chipmunks and bears and such. Sonny Stitt and the gang, Barbecue Man here on Vox Pop, 800-348-25519. I'm getting hungry. Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch is here. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery and Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum. Two more emails about critters, and we'll make them quick, right? Because a lot of people are on the phone. This is from Wayne Stone Ridge. The subject heading, Chipmunks, Help, all caps. 3 exclamation points. I've been growing vegetables for over 25 years. This is the first year that I've had chipmunks eating my tomatoes. I have lots of green tomatoes, but they eat anything that starts to ripen or even when they're green. I've sprinkled repellent granules, sprayed bottom leaves with repellent, but it doesn't seem to work. I have yet to eat a tomato this year. Help, says Wayne in Stone Ridge.
It's somehow you need to eliminate the chipmunks.
Well, duh.
Well, I mean, make it so that they do not live in your yard anymore.
Fencing could do that. Fencing could do it. You have to use small fencing.
Yeah.
Chicken wire. Is big and small enough?
Chicken wire, I think, would be too big.
I'm almost thinking it would be too big, too, for a persistent chipmunk.
Having watched a chipmunk squeeze through a door opening this morning.
Yeah. Hardware cloth.
Hardware cloth would definitely do it. Guaranteed chipmunk free.
But it's got to go down about 6 inches.
About 6 inches under the ground, because they'll try to dig for a short amount of time, and they never give much to it. So once they get an inch or two, they generally don't keep digging. Six inches would be more than adequate. And I don't think you'd have them coming in up over the top. I don't think.
I have seen them climb.
So you might need a topper.
Yes, a topper I think would be a good
hardware
thing.
Cloth.
Great. And then, well, gosh, the hardware cloth is totally misnamed. I mean,
it really is.
If you put it over the top, you're in danger, don't you think?
You know, I'm not quite sure. I'm not where hardware cloth, the name itself, comes from.
I have no idea.
Unless it's because it's used in reinforcing concrete and it's like a type of cloth.
Maybe.
But I don't know about that.
I mean, that's a lot of investment for the tomatoes, for each tomato.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about now going up 4 or 5 feet, because unless you're going to top it, and then you got to go up 6 feet.
It is an investment. It's an engineering.
And you're going to go around a tomato, and you have to give the tomato some room. So it seems like a lot to do. We did talk about, how to eliminate voles in contained tubes in the past.
With traps,
yes. Mouse traps. So something similar may work for chipmunks.
And they also do have heart traps, small ones that would actually be used for chipmunks. And then
let them go. And you can't travel with them. What's the point?
It gets tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you have like a lot more land and you may be able to, possibly relocate to a different part of your property, but they do come back.
Yeah.
I think some way to eliminate them and trapping them is probably the way to do it.
Okay, fair enough. One more question about critters, and then we'll go back to the phones. This one's from John. Subject heading, bears wreaking havoc on young apple trees. I planted a 26-tree apple orchard about 5 years ago from bare root trees, all heirloom varieties. They're doing great. This was the first full bearing year. However, early this season, I noticed some huge gashes in the trunks and branches, as well as some large branches broken off. I first blamed my 6-year-old son, since he went through a destructive phase a few years ago, and I thought he might have taken a knife or other sharp implement to them, until my neighbor said he had seen bears climbing apple trees on his property. I did apologize to my son. Is there anything to do to keep bears off young apple trees? And that's from John.
Electric fence.
And that'll keep the 6-year-old away too, as well.
That would work for most 6-year-olds and bears.
No, that's terrible.
A little wire with a little battery, a little jolt.
Oh, they're not lethal.
No, it doesn't hurt them.
Oh, good.
It just gives them a little jolt, enough to stay away. Yeah, people do that with honey. Sometimes people have issues with bears getting into honey.
Yeah,
their hives.
See Warner Brothers cartoons again.
There it is.
Yep.
But that works really well. Do you guys have any other?
No, I think that is definitely the way to go. And you putting it up. I actually have the same problem, and I haven't put the electric fence up yet because I haven't actually purchased.
You have an electric fence. Delilah, do you have an electric fence?
Do you have the bear problem?
We do not. We just keep everything a long ways from the woods so the bears don't come out by as far as where our plants are.
Yeah. But, what I'm getting at was just training them early. Don't wait until the fruit is up and then set up the fence just for the harvest time. Yep. Set it up in the spring or set it up right now.
Yeah, just set it up.
So that it's running, all the time.
And I would do 2 or 3 strands so that they can't easily go underneath it. And the other great thing about an electric fence is it'll keep the deer out as well.
Yep.
Because the deer will raise havoc on
They
apple
are
trees.
Crazy this year. The deer, too. I mean, there have been so many. I don't know about you guys. But
a lot of deer. A lot of baby deer this year, too. I've seen a lot of fawns.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Artem in Pittsfield has been waiting a long time. You're on. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
I have a question about the summer squash and vine borers. I've had raised beds for about 5 summers now, and first summer, no problem. I've had zucchini plants and yellow squash. Then the next year, the vine borer destroyed all the plants before I got any fruit. And I've been switching the bed since, but it seems like the grub are everywhere. Now, I use the grub axe in the spring, but I don't use it on the beds. The garden beds, I read that's not supposed to do that. So any suggestions on controlling vine borer in the garden beds, the raised beds?
What's happening is it's a moth, and the adults are flying around. After, you know, they've mated and they're flying around, laying eggs on the base of the plant, right where it's, you know, coming up out of the ground within a few inches. So applying anything to control grubs in the soil is not going to work anyway, because they're laying the eggs, and the eggs are basically inserted, I believe, into either a crack, or they're actually inserted in the plant, and then they just are always in the plant. They've never been in the soil. So you want to keep the moths from coming, and you can do that, or you want to kill the eggs or the juvenile grubs as soon as they hatch. And so there's a couple ways to do that. One would be to plant your plants, and then pretty much immediately cover them with some floating row cover or some kind of barrier that is designed to keep insects from getting to the plants. And while they're small and they're not really flowering, the moths can't get at them. Now, I'm pretty sure there's only one life cycle a year, so that once the plants have gotten bigger and it's kind of hard to keep them under the fabric, and you want to get – there's flowers now and you want to get some pollination happening, you can pull the fabric off, and I don't believe another set of adult moths would be flying around. But I'm not 100% sure about that.
Yeah, it's usually one generation per year, but it can be an extended generation. So, like, we have some squash vine borers showing up just in the last couple of weeks, late emerging ones.
Yep.
But usually by the time the plants are big, they're not that interested in them.
Okay.
It's when they're smaller.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So keeping them covered with, like Greg said, some row cover or some netting, something to prevent the moth from accessing it is what you need to do.
All right, Artem, thanks for the call. Let's go to Rajan in Glenville. You're on. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I live in Glenville, and off late, at least a month or two onwards, I am seeing a lot of development of anthills on my lawn, only in some areas. And another part of the question is, around that area, the lawn, the grass is thinning, and the blades of the grass is thinning. And elsewhere, I see the grass is broadening. So what is this situation, and how should I handle it?
Okay. We have a lot of anthills too in our house.
This is their season. They're going at it now. This is when you're going to notice them. They've had all summer to grow. They like certain soils. There's probably in some cases depending on the species, some rotting old stumps or wood that it's down there that they are partially feeding on. They like your yard, and so it's there are products you can apply to anthills. But, you know, they're going to be there again next year because you have the environment. And I personally would just enjoy the ants myself. However,
I would enjoy the ants is what you just
enjoy
said.
Enjoy the
In
whole
what way?
Idea
it's
that
part
you
of the
have
ecosystem,
this,
though.
Okay.
Yeah, you have this
right.
little activity.
Right,
now,
fine.
You know, would I set my patio table right there? No, I probably would put it away 20 feet. But and then in terms of blade thickness and thinness, that sounds like you probably are looking at different species or selections of grass that are mixed in your lawn, and that's pretty normal unless you're trying to grow a very specific species at a time. And really, if you're going to think about that, you could hire someone who offers that as a lawn service.
Yeah, I got a friend that's a dowser, and he says anthills are a sign of good energy spots, especially when you see the larger ones. So,
all right, well,
something to be said for that.
What do you think of that?
That's a good thing. For my the blade situation, we always bought the grass from one place, and I have a proper underground irrigation system.
Okay.
In spite of that, this is happening. I'm wondering if there is something to do with these anthills or some change in the soil properties over time. I don't know.
I mean, over time, your lawn, the seeds you put down on your lawn will take and grow, but the other plants, you know, will be windblown into your lawn and certainly find a niche and grow as well. So So it's not just what you put down. There are other sources.
And most of the grass seed we get has a mix of different types of grass seed in it as well. So you do tend to get a mix of different types of grass generally, unless you're buying a specific, hey, we only want Kentucky bluegrass. And, you know, you can get pure seed that way. But most of them have mixes to enable that plant, the grass, to grow in a mix of shade and sun and different conditions.
Well, thank you very much for the call. Now we're running short on time. Let's go to Lenox, Massachusetts. Susan, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
I've had a problem for a couple of years with gout weed, also called bishop's weed.
Yep. That's a tough one.
Yeah, and this year I really tried to eliminate it. It's a couple of yards worth of soil in a very small garden, so it's a real problem. I dug up, first of all, I let it grow, confusing it with some astilbe that was there. It looked very similar in the beginning. So finally, I just pulled up everything, all the astilbe, all the goutweed. I tried to go after the roots as far as I could, but obviously I didn't get them all because it just kept growing back. And I kept on top of it until a couple of weeks ago when it's been so rainy, I didn't get into the garden, and this week I'm sick and can't get out. So it's really overtaking that area again, and I just don't know what to do.
Okay.
I've replanted some new plants in there, and I hate to give them up.
Okay.
Yep. So,
but it's I didn't cover the whole area.
Yep. So the issue with that one, which is why it's a challenging one for gardeners, is because it's really most plants you can dig up and get rid of, especially if you're persistent. But that one, I don't know if you can ever dig it all up. Every time you dig it, a little tiny piece will break off of that root system, and it's very it's a root system that's kind of brittle, and a little piece of it's all you need. So, you know, generally speaking, what you said, digging the plants up, getting moving them, and then, you know, smothering that area. If it's not a huge area, just a piece of black plastic would anchor down and then, you know, a little bit beyond the border of where the plants grow, and you leave that on for a month or two. It's a goner in that area. But if it is a little piece on side, you know, one side or the other of the black plastic where you're smothering it, it can migrate back in.
Okay. Yeah, I think the real problem, because you can eliminate goutweed if you're exceptionally persistent, you dig it out.
Yeah.
You know, if you're moving those astilbe or whatever you've put into that garden that have that in it, and then you move them somewhere else, unless you bare root them, take all the soil off the plant, and that's not something you want to do in the middle of summer, but it's certainly something you could be doing in October, because there'll be little pieces of that goutweed attached that you didn't know until you took all the soil off, and you'll see the different color in the root system. So cleaning it up is possible. You may want to hire someone to do that. And then what I was really getting at in the beginning, which I forgot, was that if there are pockets of this plant in your neighbor's yard or somewhere else in your yard, and you let it flower, those seed heads will end up in your garden somewhere. So you do have to be vigilant, constant vigilance.
All right, we have 1 minute left, and Gina's email here quickly. We'll have to answer it quickly. The extent of my gardening has been reduced to an enormous pumpkin patch thoughtfully planted by a squirrel from last Thanksgiving decorations. I love it. It's taken over. I first had lots of blossoms, read online that I had to rub the male and females together to get pumpkins. My 93-year-old mother claimed nonsense, so I did nothing. I do have about a dozen in various stages of development. But can I cut back all the extraneous vines and runners that don't have fruit so I can at least mow and not have my neighbors upset? That's from Gina, who says, a.k.a. Ray's crush. Well, I didn't know you cared. I didn't even know I cared. All right, we have 20 seconds.
You can cut back the extra vines. I don't, if you're interested in getting the biggest fruit or the sweetest fruit, I wouldn't do that. But you certainly could cut them back to keep your neighbors happy.
And you know what I do? I just take them and push them back in. Like, they're coming out. Just take them and turn them around.
Pull them right on back.
Pull them right back the way they go into the middle.
Yep.
Make them conform. All right. So, Dale Isla Riggs, how do we find the berry patch?
We're on Route 22 in Steventown on Fridays and Sundays, and at the Troy Market on Saturdays, and theberrypatch.net.
Fred Breglia, the Landis Arboretum.
We're at 174 Lape Road, Esperance, New York, and you can find us on landisarboretum.org.
And Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
Ward's Nursery, 600 South Main Street, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, or wardsnursery.com.
You know, we didn't get through a third of the callers and emails today, so good thing this gang will be back in 2 weeks. Support comes from Plaza Travel Center, presenting trips escorted by owner Gene Gagnon, a trip to Japan in October and to Scotland in April. For trip details, Gene at plazatravel.net. And the Albany Pine Bush Preserve, now accepting submissions for the annual Pine Bush Juried Photo Exhibit, featuring images taken from the preserve visitor's perspective, albanypinebush.org. Well, once again, thanks to Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs for being here. Thanks to Zach, our engineer. Susie Chekai screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the show, I'm going to learn about Scandinavian cuisine. Here's a newsflash. I don't know anything about it. Julia Jorn from Julia's Local will be here. See you, too.